everyone.
This week on How'd You Become So Awesome, we're interviewing Dr. Susie Wiles.
Susie is a passionate science communicator, a microbiologist and bioluminescence enthusiast, or as her TEDx profile describes her, that pink-haired science lady.
Susie leads the Bioluminescence Superbugs group at the University of Auckland, where she studies infectious diseases by making bacteria glow in the dark. In addition to this incredibly cool research, Susie communicates science as a blogger on SciBlogs, in her own podcast, and produces explainer animations for YouTube.
For her science communication efforts, Susie has been recognized with tons of very important accolades: the New Zealand Association of Scientists Science Communication Award, the Prime Minister's Science Media Communication Prize, and the Royal Society of New Zealand's Callaghan Medal. As proof of her rising celebrity status in the field, this weekend she's delivering a TEDx talk in Christchurch on her research.
Susie, welcome to the show. We know it's only two probably very short sleeps until your TEDx talk, so we really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Now, Susie, you do so many different things and you're particularly passionate about science communication, which I'm going to guess you do a lot of that just for passion rather than for profit. Can you briefly explain what you do and why you think it's so important to communicate science?
So one of the reasons I communicate a lot of science is because I'm a scientist who works with animals, laboratory mice. And I think it's really, really important when scientists are working with something that's considered slightly controversial, like the use of animals in research, that they're, you know, willing to be open about it and to tell people what they do and to answer questions about what they do. I think the more silent we are, the more it looks like we have something to hide. And I don't have anything to hide. So that was sort of one of the things, I guess, that got me started with communicating science.
Now, we know that women are underrepresented in science statistically, and as a result, they face a lot of challenges. I just wanted to ask you about some of the biggest professional challenges that you've faced and how you worked through them.
Oh, gosh. So, actually, until recently, I thought most of the challenges that I had faced had just been to do with me being me rather than me being a woman. But I had an experience very recently that really showed that a lot of this stuff is about gender. So at a job interview fairly recently, I was asked about how I was going to stop the stress of this job affecting my husband and my family. And it was just so kind of surprising. I mean, these questions are illegal. And so it was sort of like, wow, okay, yeah, no, sexism definitely exists. And it isn't just the pink hair, it's kind of like the whole package. So I mean, it's really hard. And we know from lots of data that, you know, women's grant applications are less likely to be successful. I mean, there is so much stuff out there that's counting against us. Apart from just doing our best. I mean, again, that's the other hard thing, is that I think some of the studies show that women also, that you have to be better than your colleagues just to be considered equal. And for me, this has actually been I have experience of this, but it's as being a science communicator. So, you know, I've been very successful as a science communicator. And so the perception is that I'm no longer a scientist. And I think this is one of my biggest challenges, because I have had to be two or three times as good at my science to compensate for the fact that I have been very good at science communication. And it's really hard, because you're essentially doing two jobs and you have to excel at both of them, and nobody will cut you any slack. And you have to be better than everybody around you just to be considered equal. And it's very tiring, but I guess, you know, we love our jobs, right? So
yeah.
You kind of do it. And for me, I mean, I just sort of soldier through them, and I have lots of people who are very supportive and will pick me up when I'm in tears and say, go on, get back to it. But for me, it's really important to support everyone around me who might be coming up and facing the same barriers, and to try and, you know, help them get through them. But it is very hard.
Yeah.
I have pink hair, and one of the issues with my pink hair is that I think people think I'm younger than I am, and so I get a lot of like, oh, you know, you must be so inexperienced as a kind of thing, and it's like, actually no, I'm not inexperienced. Stop treating me like a student.
Yeah.
But yeah, those things are hard. They are hard. And I get asked to do a lot of talks at schools, you know, as a kind of come and be inspirational to our young ladies. And I'm very happy to do them. But recently I've also started talking about sexism and science because I think it's not fair to be encouraging young women to be going into science without them being aware of some of the shit that they're going to have to put up with. And it's not, you know, it's not disappearing. I mean, there were some studies saying it's going to take about another 80 years before we reach parity. And I mean, that's outside of my lifetime and the girls that I am trying to encourage. So I think making them aware that these things are still challenges is important. Yeah, because people didn't tell us that.
Absolutely. Just on the science communication and being taken less seriously as a scientist, I know Randy Olson in the book Don't Be Such a Scientist, he talks about how Carl Sagan, one of the most famous science communicators ever, was often denied awards and admission to scientific professional groups because people assumed that, you know, because he was good looking and because he was on television, that meant that he wasn't a serious scientist. So I'm really interested to know that science communication and communicating your work seriously can sometimes actually, you know, have consequences for your professional research career.
It does. And I think one of the issues is around people's perceptions of why we do it. So, partly because of the pink hair, it's a very visual thing. So I often end up with my photo and things, or, you know, I have done a few things on TV. And people seem to think that you're doing it because you're trying to promote yourself. And actually, that's not the point at all. You know, there are like 101 reasons why I communicate. And that isn't one of them. You know, sharing my passion is another, because I'm good at it is another one, you know. And so they kind of seem to think that it's just about you wanting to be heard, as opposed to it being about what you're trying to talk to people about. And that's the bigger picture. And that's a really difficult thing. And until, I don't know how it's going to be solved. I mean, New Zealand's trying really hard with all the prizes and stuff we have, but they're still not treated hugely seriously. And, you know, I mean, the universities love us to win them, but our colleagues are a little bit like, oh, well, it's not a real prize, because it's, you know, like, for example, the couple of prizes that I've won, you know, so both the Royal Society of New Zealand Medal and the one of the Prime Minister's Science Prizes, and yet because they're for communication of science and not science, it's like they don't rank as highly, and that's a real shame. It's really disappointing. I think, okay, they keep cracking on then and try and get one of the real prizes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's hard.
As science communicators, it's a real shame to us too. But we're glad that you won them. And we're glad that you're fighting the fight as well.
I think partly it's just I'm not gonna let them beat me.
So Susie, as you know, this podcast is called How Did You Become So Awesome? So what we're trying to find out is, was there a tipping point for you or a specific moment or opportunity that you feel set you on the path to awesome?
So I think there were... I think there's been several. I mean, the usual having supportive family and friends and all that sort of nonsense. But I think there's two, so in terms of the communication stuff, I think there's two real things that were the triggers for me to really step up. And so one of them was this award that I won many years ago now about the animal research. And so it was about basically using animals more ethically and using less of them. And it was the first time this award had ever been awarded in the UK. It was a pretty big deal. It was a big chunk of money to spend on research, and it was awarded by the science minister at the time. And so I was told I'd won this award, and I was like, yay. And then they said, so we want, you know, we're going to put some media stuff out there. And I was like, no way, you must be joking, it's about animals. And they sat me down and, you know, gave me this very stern talking to about how, you know, it was really important to be open and that what I was doing was good stuff, and they wanted, you know, they didn't want their first prize to be like this media blackout. And so I was like, yep, okay, you're absolutely right. And they gave me some media training, and then basically nothing happened. It didn't become a big story at all. And so that was sort of also an indication that actually maybe people weren't quite so scared of, you know, of the stuff, or the media weren't going to make a big story out of it. So that was the one point that made me realize, yes, you're right, I should talk about what I do. And then the second one was much more recently. So about 5 years ago, I read a book called Trickle Treatment by Simon Singh and Edzard Ernst. And it's about alternative medicine. And it's a fantastic book that goes through the science of whether alternative medical practices like acupuncture and things like that, whether there is any evidence for them being effective. And at the end of their book, they've got a little chapter on why alternative medicine is so popular. And they kind of list medical researchers as one of their reasons why it's popular, because medical researchers don't stand up and be counted, don't say, you know, this is bullshit or not, and don't they felt like they didn't champion the science enough. So I just took that as a, you're absolutely right, you know, I have skills at, you know, reading research papers and understanding evidence and how science works, and so it sort of made me branch out more into just being enthusiastic about science in general, and countering really nonsense claims when I see them. So it was sort of a reason to start blogging, and everything sort of built from there, really. I feel like once I had a blog, then all sorts of opportunities came through that, and just, you know, wanting to engage with people about nonsense and how science works and how you find stuff out has become a real interest of mine.
Susie, now it's time for the final five. In this section, we are going to ask you five questions that have been submitted by listeners, and you have to respond as fast as possible. Are you ready?
Okay, I am ready.
Okay, question number one. Some people say that science and scientists are boring. Do you agree? And how do you think we can make science more interesting?
I don't agree. And I would say that whoever thinks that has either not spent enough time with scientists or is hanging out with the wrong scientists. And science is awesome. And it's more about doing and exploring. And so I think that that's how we make it more exciting, by letting people, you know, giving people opportunities to do science. And not just kids, but everybody.
Absolutely. Question number two, your TEDx talk is coming up. Can you tell us a little bit more about this? And are you totally nervous or excited or completely stressed out?
I am totally nervous and excited and completely and utterly stressed out. And it's really interesting because I give public talks all the time, but somehow this one feels different and I don't want to stuff it up. Not that I want to stuff up any of the other ones, but so I'm going to be talking about glowing creatures and our glowing superbugs, and our research, kind of sort of hot off the press research about how we're trying to understand how nasty microbes evolve.
And just for our listeners, we are going to put a link in the show notes of where we can see a live streaming of that TEDx conference in Christchurch.
And then you can see whether I've stuffed it up.
Okay, question number three. You have awesome pink hair. Why?
I think it's probably because it's the closest I can get to glowing in the dark myself. And it's been like this many years now, about 14 years or something. So I can't imagine being any different now. And it turns out, you know, that it's really great to have a gimmick and people remember who I am. It's great at conferences.
Yeah.
Like, it's the one with the pink hair.
No one will forget
not
your name
else.
Yet.
Yeah. Where's Susie? Just look for the pink hair, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you cannot lose me in a crowd, basically. I am like the umbrella that people hold up. My head.
Okay, question number four. Do you have a favorite inspirational quote that keeps you motivated?
I don't know who said it, but it's kind of like the mantra that I live by. Well, in fact, I have two mantras that I live by. So the first one would be the change you want to see in the world. And I think that's kind of really important. And then the other one is, if not me, then who? And if not now, then when? And it's kind of something that really makes me get up and do stuff.
Question number five. What would be your most important advice for budding young scientists?
I think to find what really, really excites you, and then just to go for it. And don't listen to anyone who says that science is boring or, you know, that it isn't cool. Because, you know, I'd love for one day for it to be as normal for kids to aspire to be a scientist instead of, you know, a musician or an artist or a sports person, you know, in New Zealand it would be an All Black. I really wish that kids would aspire to be scientists, and so I think by making it feel normal, so just find what you're really good at, find what you're passionate about, and just follow your dream.
I'm going to add question 5.5 to this. What would be your most important advice for budding young female scientists?
Gosh, Don't let the bastards get you down.
I love that.
It's going to be hard. Find some women who inspire you. Make contact with them. Find yourself a mentor. Find someone who can help you. And actually, sometimes, I say this to sort of, slightly older people, is that your mentor doesn't necessarily have to be a woman, actually. And that sometimes it's what's really, really important for us to make progress is for men to realize that women are awesome. And so the more women we have being mentored by men, probably the better.
So note to any men out there, if you have a role in mentoring young women as well.
Yeah, they do.
Okay, you're almost free to get back to your work now. But before we go, what else is coming up for you post-TED Talk?
In terms of science communication stuff, so this prize that I won last year had some money with it. And so I had said I was going to do a few things, one of which is create a website for all the YouTube animations to go on that will have kind of more information about the creatures and the hope is to make some little mini documentaries that kind of go with them, like 5-minute documentaries. But I guess the thing that I'm most excited about at the moment is that I am writing a children's book about bioluminescence with my daughter, who's 8. And this has been a really awesome experience. I having started the process and made contact with various writers and illustrators, I've realized now that the process by which you publish a book is very different to what we're doing in writing this book. So whether it ever sees the light of day by a real publisher, I don't know. But I'm determined that this little thing will be published in some way. So there may well be a Pledge Me or a Kickstarter campaign happening at some point next year to finish this book and get it illustrated and published if no publisher is interested. And various people, when they heard that we were writing a children's book, have asked if I was thinking of writing an adult's book about bioluminescence. So that may well be something, that may well be next year's project. I'll have to see how exhausted I am by then.
Well, 2015 is the International Year of Light, so hopefully there'll be lots of interest.
Yeah, yes, actually. So there are a few things. I mean, in Auckland we're doing I guess the thing that is coming up really soon is Art in the Dark, which is a fantastic little, it's an art festival in Auckland where about 40 artists take over a local park for 4 nights. It's in about 3 weeks' time. And I did something last year of collaborating with an artist, and we're doing something again this year. So what I love about this is basically taking bioluminescent bacteria and putting them in the park, and people aren't really expecting that. So last year we had these glowing bacteria filling up 3D-printed squid, and this year we're going to have sort of bubbling glass vessels full of bacteria. So I guess that's the most immediate thing that's coming up. It'd be very cool. I'm sure there'll be some videos of it online at some point.
I love all the collaborations that you have going on with artists, and you're also working in art form yourself.
Yeah, it's really cool. I guess this is another thing about science, right? That people think of science as not being creative. Mm. There's the creative stuff like art, and then there's science. And actually, science is immensely creative. I work with something, these glowing bacteria, that actually we can do all sorts of really cool stuff.
Where's the best place for listeners to find you online?
Oh, God, I'm all over the place. So I'm quite a tweeter. So for anyone who tweets, I'm at Suzie W.
Do you want to spell it out?
SIOUXSIEW. And then I have a YouTube channel, which is Skeptimoo, so SKEPTIMOO. For my science, we have a lab website, which is superbugslab.org. And then I blog on SciBlogs, SciBlogs.co.nz, and my blog is called Infectious Thoughts. So stuff appears in all over these things. I guess our bioluminescent photos appear on Flickr, but there are usually links to those things from Twitter or from my blog.
Awesome. And we'll put all those links in the show notes as well.
Great.
Okay. Thank you so much, Suzie, for being on the show. We really appreciate your time, and good luck at your TEDx talk in Christchurch on Saturday.
Thank you. I'm terrified.
We'll be rooting for you. You're going to do awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
You can check out the show notes with all the links on our website, didsomeonesayscience.com. Just click on the podcast page.
Next week, we'll be interviewing YouTube science rapper Koma Nitty. His latest release, All About That Space, is getting heaps of media attention. So tune in next week.